You may approach, and you may proceed.
Welcome to council. May it please the court. My name is Marty Klein. I'm with Doran Klein PC in Neely, Nebraska, and I'm here today representing the appellant, Kelly Vaness. Basically, for a little bit of background here, Ms. Vaness pled guilty to two counts of possession, misdemeanor, and infraction. These were felony possession charges. What had happened, she was then enrolled in the North Central Drug Court, or problem-solving court, in which she unsuccessfully completed. If I go back for a minute, LB 605 was effective as of August 30th, 2015. Ms. Vaness was arrested in September of 2015. So LB 605 and everything that goes along with it should apply in this particular case. Now, when Ms. Vaness was unsuccessful with the problem-solving court...
Just to be clear, the conduct for which she was arrested also occurred after the effective date of the statute.
Correct, Justice.
So everything occurred after the effective date of the statute.
Yes, she was arrested, I believe it was on September 13th of 2015, which would have been 13 or 14 days after LB 605 became effective.
Well, she was arrested contemporaneously with the conduct for which she was charged.
That is correct, Paul, you're understanding. Right. I'll try to be more clear here going forward, if that works. All right. So, basically, she was then sentenced by the 8th District District Court Judge. She received a sentence on count two, which was one of the felony possession charges of 12 months to 12 months. The other felony possession charge, she got a sentence of 10 months to 10 months to be served consecutively.
You mentioned the termination from drug court. And then the case went to sentencing. Between the termination from drug court and the sentencing hearing, did Ms. Vaness ever move to withdraw her guilty plea?
I don't believe she did.
Is that significant to our analysis at all?
I don't believe so from the perspective of one of the issues that we have here is an ineffective assistance of counsel. I don't know if she was correctly advised by her attorney several things that her not do, which advised the court at the sentencing hearing that she was at. He was representing both the person who was the quote-unquote drug dealer, along with the person at the drugs.
Is that connection anywhere in our record?
It is not. That is only something that my client had informed me of. There is nothing in the record, and obviously we have a very short record here because we just went through an arraignment.
So is that something we can reach on direct appeal, or must it wait for post-conviction?
I believe that particular issue must wait for post-conviction. I don't think that that's an issue that can be addressed at direct appeal. Obviously, one of the issues with taking over a case at direct appeal, that kind of ties your hands that you can't do with a post-conviction is that I can't go out and ask for more evidence to post not on a direct, which ties my hands here, and I don't think it's an issue that we can address at this point in time. There are, in this particular case, a couple of...
Back to that issue, the judge would have no way of knowing...
Unless he was told by counsel, I don't believe there's any way that the judge would know.
And would counsel have any way of knowing? Unless, for example, your client...
You know, I guess I take that back about the judge. Because in a pre-sentence investigation, generally, I'm not 100% sure in this particular case, but in the pre-sentence investigation, generally, you receive a copy of the police reports. And so those police reports may or may not have included the fact that the dealer in this particular case was also the person that possessed the drugs in the same case.
Well, in any event, this is not in our record to determine if there was an actual conflict.
And that is correct, Justice. That is correct. So we have two issues to address first. You have, obviously, the plain errors that were brought up by the Attorney General's office in their brief. The advisement of the incorrect penalty. obviously she received a sentence of less than what the judge incorrectly had advised her of. That's really not an issue worth addressing today. The other issue deals with a Class 4 penalty under 29-2204.02 requires a determinate sentence. And in Artis, which is kind of this case backwards, in Artis it required an indeterminate sentence. And what the court had done in that particular case is it was a sentence similar to this, where it was a time period to a time period, and the court found that that was an indeterminate sentence. In this case, what we're dealing with is the court actually gave a determinate sentence. It was a 12-month to a 12-month and a 10-month to a 10-month, which, again, that is an indeterminate sentence. For a determinate sentence, according to Artis, it would have to be, she would be sentenced on count 2 to 12 months, on count 3 to 10 months. That was not done by the judge here. For that reason, it should be remanded to the district court for resentencing on that particular issue. The other issues that I got to in...
Is that something that we can just correct? Can we modify the sentence?
That is something that this court has the ability to do as well. The other issue...
Excuse me, let me ask you something with respect to count one. Is there any error in the sentencing on count one in your view?
I'm sorry. I think what
you have said is that with respect to count two, right, which was the possession of the controlled substance, it should have been a determinate sentence, but it wasn't.
That is correct.
And the same thing on count three. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay, and then count one, if I understand, this is operating while suspended.
Basically driving under
suspension. Yeah. So is there any error to your knowledge with respect to the sentencing on count one?
Well, under 29-2204.02, I believe it just discusses Class 3, 3A, and Class 4 felonies. Count one was a Class 3 misdemeanor, so I don't believe that that would apply in this.
If it's a misdemeanor 3, would your argument be different?
If the possession charges...
No, I'm talking about the operating under suspension, right, if it is a misdemeanor 3, should it have been a determinate sentence while being also sentenced to a couple of felony 4s?
To be honest with you, I don't know yet.
Thank you.
Are misdemeanors always determinate?
Generally, yes. It was an odd sentence because it was something that I hadn't seen before when it was a 60 days to a 60 days on a misdemeanor. Normally, you just get...
Sometimes that happens when a district judge is sentencing a misdemeanor. You speak from experience.
Well, I guess with county court judges, it's just the number of days.
Well, if your form says blank to blank, you might be led into saying two things.
To believing that.
Yes.
I'll talk with Judge Kozacek the next time I see him. All right, so on the other errors that I had... that were addressed. The first, we deal with an excessive sentence. She received a consecutive sentence on drug charges. Normally, when you have drug charges that are related to the same event, the same arrest, the same day, and everything else, normally a concurrent sentence is what is handed down by the courts. I think in this particular case, based upon the facts, as you read them through my brief, a concurrent sentence should have been ordered in this case, and it was not.
They were separate substances.
They were separate substances, that is correct. But generally, I guess in my experience of what I've dealt with, when you have a case, and let's say that somebody has a felony methamphetamine and a felony marijuana charge at the same time, generally judges always, my experience has been that they generally give concurrent sentences.
Is that within the discretion of the judge?
That is within the discretion of the judge, that is correct. All right, the other issue we get to, which I briefly got to a little bit, dealt with the ineffective assistance of counsel. The other part of that claim deals with Ms. Vaness claims that she was innocent through the ordeal. Basically what had happened is that she simply picked them up for her boyfriend, delivered them to her boyfriend.
Isn't that a more serious felony?
Quite possibly. But the other part of that then is that she alleged, and again, we're not here on post-conviction, so there is no record of this, She was claiming that she was promised a very lenient sentence at the time of sentencing. She took this, I guess in one way you could argue that getting into or being able to enroll in a problem-solving court would be a lenient sentence in and of itself. But when she was unsuccessful at that, the sentence that she ultimately received of the 12 months and the 10 months consecutive could be considered excessive. Thank you very much, Justices.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. List, good morning to you.
May it please the Court, Nathan List, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the appellee, the State of Nebraska. I will also start with the determinate sentence issue. In light of this Court's opinion in State v. Artis and the denial of our PFR in State v. Jennings, I'm not going to rehash our office's position with respect to determinate sentences under current sentencing scheme. We realize or recognize that our position's unavailing unless this Court is inclined to reconsider Artis. Assuming it's not, I think the only remaining question here is what happens when the Court fails to impose a proper determinate sentence. Now, we submit that if the only error in question is that the Court has stated two numbers rather than one, as in this case, it would suffice to simply modify the judgment rather than reversing and remanding for a new sentencing hearing. It seems to us that it would be an unnecessary use of time and resources to reverse and remand for a new sentencing hearing each time a court says two numbers rather than one.
The key to that would be, in this instance, that the numbers are the same.
Correct.
If the numbers were different, you would agree we couldn't pick which one we liked.
True, and I would certainly hope that a judge doesn't impose two different numbers with the intention of imposing a determinate sentence, but I would agree if that happens, we wouldn't know which number we intended to go with.
I hesitate to do this, but what is your office's argument about determinate sentences?
Well, the position that if we were going to get back into the issue, we would not be taking issue with anything prior to Artis or 605. The position we took in Artis, which I still maintain is a valid argument, is that under the statutory scheme, indeterminate sentences would require, all indeterminate sentences would require a different number, a sentence with a minimum that's less than the maximum. And then determinate sentences would just be a fixed single number. Whether you state same number to the same number or whether it's just one number that you state, that would be the determinate sentence. And I think that that is consistent with the reading of the statute. I think it's consistent with just a basic understanding of the term determinant, and I think it's consistent with the legislature's intention that sentences are followed by some form of post-release. If you have a sentence that's the same number to the same number, which Artis says it can be, you're not going to have any form of post-release supervision on that sentence. So I think our argument in Artis promoted all of those functions, and I think it was a good argument. I understand it's been rejected, and I'm not here to draw the court's ire and pick a fight, but we do think we made a valid argument there. The court's willing to revisit it. We would entertain that, but if not, we understand. If that's not going to be revisited, to address your question, Justice Miller-Lerman, on count one, the driving under suspension conviction, that was 60-60. Assuming Artis stands, that's not valid. It would just have to be the one number. And the statutes do specifically direct that for a misdemeanor, at least sentenced in conjunction with a Class 3, 3A, or 4 felony requiring a determinate sentence, that the misdemeanor would also require a determinate sentence. That's in 28-106 and also in 29-2204.2.
Thank you.
But it could also be modified to just, since it was the same number.
Correct.
Right.
Yes, I think that would be the same. With the
so if we found error in sentencing, what do you think this court should do in terms of sentencing? Just come to understand the intentions of the trial judge and fix it rather than remand?
Yeah, well, frankly, I don't think there's really anything that has to be fixed here. The intentions are clear, same number to the same number on all the sentences in question. The intentions there, yeah, I mean, you're basically just slicing off one of the numbers and just modifying in that regard. I don't think we have to ascertain anything. And so, I guess technically you are fixing it, but I think a modification of that nature would be appropriate here, given that we're not addressing a situation, as Justice Castle mentioned, where we might be guessing with their... So no further questions on that. I'll submit the excessive sentence issue on brief. As far as the ineffective assistance of counsel claims, as far as the allegation that trial counsel failed to investigate offenses and promised a lenient sentence, I think that claim is refuted by the record. I think the plea colloquy addresses both of those very issues. She was specifically asked during the plea colloquy if she had discussed everything, all the possible defenses with her counsel. She said yes. She was asked if she was satisfied that he had adequately investigated all those defenses. She said yes. She was asked if anything other than the plea agreement had induced her into accepting this plea. She said no. So I think that falls squarely in line with our case law that you can't recant after a colloquy of that nature after the prison doors clang shut. And that's disallowed. So I think that claim's refuted. As far as the other one on the alleged conflict, that's probably, I think, a closer case. I think the record's probably insufficient on that one. I mean, on its face, I think arguably there's no conflict there. You have two people coming in. They don't appear to be pointing the finger at each other. They're just both coming in and pleading guilty to offenses. I don't see any conflict there. And if there is none, obviously there's no problem with the
record. On this record, how are we to know who Mr. Reed is and what he's alleged to have done?
I don't think we do, Your Honor. And I think if that needs to be answered in order to resolve that claim, then it has to be saved for another day.
Do you agree with the characterization that they are co-defendants or that there was a co-defendant of any sort in Ms. Van Ness's case?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, at least not based on the allegations in the appellant's brief. I don't see them as being co-defendants. I don't see them as pointing.
Well, that's usually identified in a pre-sentence investigation. Co-defendants are usually identified, aren't they?
Oftentimes, yes.
Was any co-defendant identified in this case?
Not to my knowledge.
That's my question. That was my question.
Oh, all right. If there are no further questions, we will submit the matter. I guess we would just ask for further clarification on precisely what we need to be doing with determinate sentences so that we're all on the same page, and depending on what you decide there for the appropriate relief with respect to handling the judgment.
Mr. West, I'm still a little confused on the determinate sentence and post-release supervision. You said when there's a determinate sentence with the numbers being the same, there's no opportunity for post-release supervision. Is that correct? Did I understand that correctly?
If you have an indeterminate sentence and you have the same number to the same number, then there's not going to be any form of post-release there, because the newer post-release only follows a determinate sentence.
And that's a fixed number beyond the sentence of incarceration, so it doesn't matter in that respect.
Right.
And you're talking about a 2A or a 3.
Right. So you impose 10 to 10. The other form of post-release supervision would be parole, but that's not going to come into play if the numbers are the same, because you're never going to be parole eligible. You just jam out when you've served half of your sentence. So if those two numbers are the same, there will be no post-release. And that's back when we had all the truth in sentencing changes. That was part of the impetus for all of that, as well as the good time credit, was that they had concerns that so many people were jamming out without any form of post-release supervision, and we had a problem with recidivism.
But there's no requirement for post-release supervision on those types of offenses.
Right. It's all a matter of, do you have a sentence that's less than the maximum that affords an opportunity for parole? And that's why they made some of those adjustments, was to try to promote that and get people...
But that was in 3As and 4s, correct?
Post-release
supervision.
I'm sorry?
Post-release supervision is required only in the 3As and 4s. Is that correct?
Correct. I was, with respect to other sentences, I was just talking just in a more general sense of post-release, not the statutory form of post-release that's created. Correct. That's just for 3s, 3As, and 4s. I was talking in the context of, and that's for determinants. I was talking for indeterminants on any other felony, that if it's the same to the same, you're not going to have.
For the higher level felonies, our sentencing statute now prohibits an indeterminate sentence where the numbers would be the same, correct?
Correct. Which is yet another reason that when you look at artists to say that, well, 3s, 3as, and 4s, if you kick back into 29, 22, or 4, those can be the same, but none of the others can. And so when we look at that, to me, I understand some of the concerns, but I think globally, looking at what is cleanest and most simple it's easiest if indeterminate sentences apply across the board the same way to all felonies.
But that's not the way we interpreted the previous sentencing scheme. And if we were to suddenly say that sentences of one number to the same number are now all determinate, wouldn't that have some potential effect on sentences that are out there and will be out there for a long time yet?
I don't think it would, and that's why I would say that to the extent it would be reconsidered, I want to be clear that we are basing our argument on the enactment of LB 605, that this is all premised on the statute enacted there and the changes made there. And so to answer your question, no, I don't think it would affect anything prior to LB 605, because our argument is premised entirely on 605.
Of course, if the legislature wanted to say that a sentence, if they wanted to define indeterminate sentences and determinate sentences, they certainly could do so, but they haven't, right?
That's true.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
The next case of the day, then, is In Re Estate of Warner. It's Mr. Warner.
I am.